Chaos in the National League wildcard. Two of the four teams drop their series. You've got four teams vying for three spots, all within 2.5 games of each other. Who makes the postseason and who is at home in October? We'll break that down and more on today's episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Monday, September 9th. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, what a weekend of baseball. Tons of games. A lot of them played too. It felt like smaller than usual ballparks because of college football. But either way, I want to start off in the National League wild card because we saw a bit of a shakeup here, right? The Arizona Diamondbacks barely avoided a sweep at the hands of the Houston Astros. The only reason they didn't get swept is the heroics of one Paven Smith.
Up, got himself 8 RBI.
Hang on, he's done it again! Paven Smith, 3 for 3, 3 homers, and 8 RBI. He's not having a month and a half hour. He's having a season and a half hour.
What a huge...
Having a season and a half hour is definitely a great stat to say. 4 home runs in the last 7 games. Obviously, he just had a whole bunch in that game last night. Also, that 112-mile-an-hour home run, which, did you hear that? The sound of it coming off the bat? It was a classic sound, like classic bat sound. It was the hardest hit ball of his entire career. So, Paven Smith, I don't know what got in you. I don't know what you ate before the game. But whatever it is, you need a new game routine because that was absolutely wild, my man. That was fantastic.
Yeah, he keeps the Diamondbacks from getting swept there. San Diego Padres, meanwhile, won the opener on Friday against the San Francisco Giants, dropped games 2 and 3. Game 3 is a close 7-6 loss. And then the flip side of that, the Braves and Mets both win their series. The Mets take on the Cincinnati Reds. They win the first 2, drop the finale on Sunday. Atlanta wins Friday. Drops Saturday, gets the walk-off in 11 innings on Sunday. So the Braves and Mets are now tied for the final spot in the National League wild card. And yes, they're both behind the Padres and Diamondbacks, but 2 total games separate the Padres from both the Braves and the Mets. If you're having to handicap from right here, which of these 4 teams does not make the postseason and why?
It's going to be that's a tough conversation to have, but
3 minutes into the show, let's go.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm leaning towards the Arizona Diamondbacks, and that has been a very tough conversation for me to have and a tough decision for me to make, Lindsey, because the entire last 2 weeks I've been riding Arizona thinking they could possibly even catch up to the Dodgers to win the NL West. But I think these injuries are finally starting to show up, even though they're starting to get some back. But the rotation, the pitching rotation, of all the answers that we thought we were going to get from Rodriguez, from Gallen, although Gallen's been good, there's just not been good enough. So I'm going with the Arizona Diamondbacks to be the team that just misses out. How about you?
It feels like Arizona's probably the right answer here as well. If you look at the position of, like, Ketel Marte is back now for Arizona. He had that ankle sprain. He's played 2 games, though. He's 0-for-7, 4 strikeouts, only 1 walk. Did not have a rehab stint. It's just, the injuries that they dealt with. And you look at who's hot on this team right now, and I genuinely wonder, is it enough? Eugenio Suarez in the last week is batting like .462. Corbin Carroll's finally doing a lot of stuff. But I think your point of the pitching has just been dreadful makes me feel like, okay, maybe they don't have enough here. Maybe there's not enough well-rounded contributions from the entire roster here to make this happen. You look at the last 30 days, Ryan Nelson has a .360 ERA. Even Zach Gallen has a .342 ERA and took a loss, 10 earned runs in 26 and a third innings. Merrill Kelly's ERA is over 5.5. Eduardo Rodriguez is over 6. Montgomery's already been moved to the bullpen, but he's a 6.5. Brandon Fott's almost a 7 ERA in his last 5 starts. Only 3-2, 23 runs in 27 in the third innings. It feels like this is just a team that's kind of running out of steam down the stretch, one that dealt with a ton of injuries and just could not quite, just one more injury than they were able to overcome. Obviously, they still have time. They've still got, you know, plenty of opportunity here to make it half stretch. But it just feels like they've had a little bit of a bigger hit than they were able to handle, especially now that they have seven against the Brewers still, who are in first place and vying for best record in the National League. They've got seven there and three against the Padres. Just feels like maybe it's a little too much too late in the season to overcome.
They do have two against the Rangers, and that brings up something as well. If they miss the postseason, both teams that were in the World Series last year will not be in that because the Rangers aren't going to make the postseason as well. When's the last time that's happened? I can't remember. Has it been earlier than 2010? Because I know the Giants missed it in 2010. It's been a long time. So I tried to look it up quickly while you're talking there. I couldn't find it. So if you know, let us know in the comment description below. Who was the last time? What was the last time both teams that were in the World Series did not make the postseason the next year? Because I don't know. I don't know that answer.
Yeah, I mean, it always feels like one of them doesn't, but one of them usually does. And so having both of them miss would be wild. That is the 10th hardest schedule in baseball remaining for Arizona in their 18 games. I do think there is a question about Atlanta, and we'll get more into this on the Braves Today podcast.
Yeah.
But the offense for Atlanta has very, very much not been good. And it's, yes, they have a ton of injuries. I mean, let's be completely honest. They are dealing with that. But that homestand that they just completed, technically it's not over. They have a makeup game this afternoon against the Reds. And, I mean, six-game homestand, they scored 21 runs on 44 hits, right? But one, those hits, predominantly singles. Only 9 extra base hits, only 2 home runs. And this is a team built to slug home runs. Both home runs also, Jared Kelnick. Shout out Jared Kelnick there. Set a new career high in a season. I think it was the 15th home run yesterday. But also, of those 21 runs, they scored 4 in the 9th inning in the loss on Saturday. And they scored 3 between the 9th inning and extras on Sunday. So outside of that, you know, they put up 14 runs over the majority of 6 games, which is absolutely not good enough. I don't care how good your pitching is. Scoring less than 3 runs a game is not a recipe to win games. And so I have questions about, like, yes, we feel like Arizona is the first team out, but I feel like behind them, the next lowest odds is probably Atlanta.
And what's crazy is neither of us said the New York Mets, and that's the team that has been out of it the entire time since, 3 days ago. So I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they are on the craziest hot streak right now. And I don't see it slowing down, even though they have the hardest path to the playoffs among all the 4 teams.
Yeah. Mets are 9-1 their last 10 games. Since mid August, they've been the winningest team in baseball. They just continue to absolutely roll over everybody. And so at no point do I see a Mets schedule and think, oh yeah, they can't do it. They're heading to Toronto to face those same Blue Jays that Atlanta just took 2 out of 3 from. They're going to go face them, I believe, for 3 this week. I fully expect them, the way they've played, to probably sweep Toronto. And in that case, they would gain a game. You know, they would be 1 better than Atlanta. Atlanta has a road trip to Washington this week, so we'll see what happens there. The other wild card, real quick. Let's get into the other wild card, because this was Kansas City and the Twins. And the Twins, not a good weekend here. They got swept by Kansas City, 5-0 on Friday, 4-2 on Saturday, 2-0 shutout yesterday. They scored 2 runs in 27 innings of baseball against Kansas City. The lead right now in the American League wild card, the Royals are up by 2.5 games over Minnesota. Minnesota is 3.5 games up on the next group of 3 teams, all trying to vie for that final wild card spot. Can Minnesota hold on to make the postseason?
You know, they're a team that not many people are talking about as well. They are dealing with a crap ton of injuries, Lindsay. They have so many injuries as well. I think almost every position player has dealt with something all season long. It has been I argue that it's actually been worse than Atlanta, you know, if you actually look into it, just not in the season ending aspect, but they've been banged up quite a bit. If they can't figure it out, then they might slip and fall here. I thought it was going to be Kansas City, and they find the way to figure it out. So maybe Minnesota will too. But I think that, you know, this weekend series sweep that happened to Minnesota has made this wild card race a little more interesting as well. We're talking about the Detroit Tigers only being 3.5 games back. I did not have that on my bingo card this year, although I can never figure out what the AL Central is going to do. That, to me, is the most interesting division in all of baseball, because there's never the same winner after every year. Never is. And then the Mariners and the Red Sox, they're right on the cusp. Four games, I think, is like the absolute farthest you can be down at this point and maybe try and make a comeback. So I'm going to stick a fork in the Rays and everybody else below, but there's a possibility that we do still see three AL Central teams in the race, but it's not the Minnesota Twins. And that's a wild scenario to me right now.
It absolutely is. We'll make our picks towards the end of the show about which, you know, which team we like the most out of that group of three at the end there. To your point on the injuries, though, look at this. Royce Lewis, two different stints on the IL. He's been back now for, I believe, just over about 5 or 6 weeks. Has not been that good. Kind of unspoken little thick story there. Not been that good since he came back. Max Kepler's out right now, been out for a week. His second stint this year. Carlos Correa is still out. He's coming up on 2 months with that plantar fasciitis issue in his foot. Byron Buxton, the hip inflammation. He had a recurrence of it on his rehab start, or his rehab outing that he was doing. Alex Kirilloff has been out now for 3 months with a nerve issue in his back. They've, Austin Martin, Kyle Farmer, Jose Miranda all missed a couple weeks in there, midsummer, July, August. Brooks Lee missed about a month. When he came back, they sent him back down to the minors, I believe. And then Manny Margot is out right now with a groin strain. So they've had, 10 different position players go on the injured list this year. And then that doesn't even count all of the pitchers they've lost. Chris Paddock to a forearm strain. Anthony DeScalfani's out for the year. Justin Topa out for the year. A lot of injuries there. So they've also been very injured, like Atlanta has. And similar to Atlanta, right now they're reeling, trying to figure out how to replace all these guys, because at the moment, you've got what was projected to be 5 everyday starters on the IL, including 3 outfielders, Kirilloff, who plays outfield and first base, and your starting shortstop. So tough, tough road for Minnesota. If they don't make the postseason, it feels like you kind of have an explanation there. But the flip side of this is Kansas City has been able to rebound from losing Vinny Pascantino. I mean, they dropped, I think it was, 6 straight games. But if you look at them right now, they've won their last 4, kind of righted the ship a little bit. They have to head, starting today, they're heading to New York to take on the Yankees. So interesting there, while the Twins get to be at home versus the Angels. A little bit lopsided as far as the difficulty of opponent there. But we'll see what some of these Royals hitters can do with that short porch in right field there in New York.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what happens this week when it comes to these teams, because, you know, we keep talking about this National League wildcard race and how close it is, and it should be the primary story of September, because it really is. But this one's also starting to get quite interesting, and it really is, and it's happening because of what's going on in the AL Central. I never thought that I would be this into the AL Central this late in September this year, because I didn't expect 4 teams to be in it, Lindsay. I really did not whatsoever.
And we all thought Cleveland was just going to run away with it, and it wasn't even going to be close. And it turns out that Cleveland is still in the lead. Yes. I mean, they're still up, handily. But this is really an interesting race, just simply because so many teams could be in the postseason. Cleveland's lead is 2.5 games, but it's only 2.5 games. So we'll see what happens. If they were to drop down behind Kansas City, they'd be in the second wildcard spot. So intrigue even at the top there. A team where they're pretty safely leading the division, and I think they're going to prove you wrong and actually end up winning the division. But the Los Angeles Dodgers, 6 games up on the Padres, 6.5 on the Diamondbacks. They dropped the series opener to those Cleveland Guardians, came back and won games 2 and 3. And because we have to, here is one of the reasons why they won on Sunday.
on this 1-0. Ohtani tees off right field, hooking toward the pole. It's fair and gone. 46-46 for Shohei Ohtani.
He just makes it look so dang easy.
Watching Shohei Ohtani swing is weird to me because he looks like he is putting every single bit of force he has into every single swing. Like, how has this dude not heard an oblique yet? But no, 46th home run, 46 stolen bases. This, it feels like it's an obvious answer on this. But when you look at the fact that the Dodgers have 19 games left against not a ton of tough opponents, 6 against the Rockies, 3 against the Marlins, Shohei Ohtani hits 50-50 rather easily, doesn't he?
Yeah, he hits 50-50, and I would argue that it might get closer to 55 than is 50. I don't know if he gets to 55, but I think we might get 53. And like, I think that's where we're at with him. I don't think that we're going to see Shohei Ohtani sit back and take some rest days until he gets to 50. So maybe we don't get that far. They might get him ready for the postseason and give him a couple rest days towards the end of the month, but not until he gets 50. If there's a chance, or if for some reason he's sitting at 49 on the last weekend of the season and on stolen bases or home runs, you best believe that he's going to play. And you know, he's not one that's going to chase stats. You definitely can tell that's the case. But for the sake of baseball, for the sake of the Dodgers history books, they're not going to let him sit down. So he is definitely going to hit 50-50 this season.
And if he is behind pace in that final series of the season, well, you know, especially on home runs, guess what? They're in Colorado for that final series.
What a perfect time.
They end the season in Coors Field. So he could not only hit number 50, he could hit a 500-foot 50th home run. It feels
Man,
like
he could be at 46-46 heading into Colorado, and I'd still be okay with him probably making 50-50.
Definitely feels like he would do it. So definitely interesting there. Okay. I want to get in the quick pitch. We've got a lot of stuff to kind of get to here. First, since we just talked about Ohtani, let's go ahead and talk about some of the other milestones that guys are on the verge of doing. I think the first one is Aaron Judge. Do we think Aaron Judge can get to 60 home runs? Because as of right now, he's sitting on 51, still leads baseball, but he has not hit a home run in 12 games. Do we think between now and the end of the season, he can still get to 60?
Yeah, 60 home runs, I think, is going to be tough. 9 more home runs is quite a lot for where we are this season. But if anybody can do it, it's Aaron Judge. Because, I mean, this guy, just like Ohtani, he makes it look so easy. I want to say yes, and I'm usually pretty optimistic about this stuff, Lindsay, but I think he's going to miss out on it. And if I had to give a number, I think he's going to finish with 58. I think he's going to get close, but I think 58 is where I see Aaron Judge finishing this season.
Can we talk about the curse of Paw Patrol?
Oh, I think it's very well. I think Chase was on the case there.
Yeah, August 26th, Judge goes. It wasn't actually on Paw Patrol, right? It was on a spinoff show of Paw Patrol, right? But Aaron Judge is on there because the Yankees hosted a viewing party for the families of the players on the field. They watched it on the big screen in Yankee Stadium. But since then, Aaron Judge is 8-for-43. He has only 3 extra base hits. They're all doubles. He's batting 186 with a 256 slugging since he appeared on that children's show. Do we need to treat this like the new SI cover curse?
Yeah, look at what happens when Aaron Judge finally gets to make it big time, right? Where people actually finally know his name, that he's a superstar, because he hasn't been since then. Look what happens. The fame finally has got to Aaron Judge. No, I don't know if you really need to make that happen, if you need to think that's a joke, but it's something really funny. Maybe he needs to work out a quick September promo with Grimace, because that worked for the Mets. Maybe it'll counteract work for Aaron Judge as well. But hey, maybe if the Paw Patrol curse continues on, maybe he doesn't get the 58. Like I think maybe he sits at only 53 or 54.
There we go. All right. Ellie De La Cruz, real quick, 62 stolen bases. He leads baseball in both stolen bases and caught stealings, also in strikeouts with 186. Does he, like, where does he finish on stolen bases? Does he break 70?
I like where you threw that little last portion in there. Now, shout out to Nolan Gorman, who's no longer in the major leagues, to help him chase that record. But that's tough. You know, he was on pace for, I think, 75 at one point in time.
Would have beat Ronald Acuña Jr. 73.
I yep. don't know if he's going to do that now. So now I think he's on pace for 69. I think that he could possibly get to 70. But again, that all just depends on if he can get on base, because that has been the easiest thing for him to do as of late.
Okay. More of milestones here. The Chicago White Sox are not good. Breaking news. The Chicago White Sox are bad. Where do they finish with losses?
Yeah, I'm still set on they're going to break the record, and I think 125 is the number that they're going to get to. So I think they're going to set the precedent here and make it, you know, something that's going to be completely very hard to break again. But don't worry, Chicago, there's always next year.
Yeah. All right. Does Chris Sale win the National League Triple Crown? Because if you look at this right now, for Chris Sale, he leads in, you know, I don't know, everything. He leads in ERA. He leads in wins. He leads in strikeouts over Dylan Cease. Does Chris Sale win the Triple Crown?
I'm going to go even one up on you on Lindsay in that one and say that for the first time since 2011, we'll have a Triple Crown winner on both sides. Tarek Skubal's going to get it for the American League. Chris Sale's going to get it for the National League. So first time since Clayton Kershaw and Justin Verlander did it over 10 years ago, we're going to get it happen this year.
Yep. Sale stats, 16-3, 238 ERA, 213 strikeouts. His win total, his win loss, his ERA, his strikeouts, his ERA plus of 175, his FIP, his strikeout rate, all of that leads all of baseball. Skubal in the American League, 16-4, 253 ERA, 208 strikeouts. His FIP of 254, that all leads the American League. So not only would this be the first Triple Crown in a long time, lefties. It would be two lefties winning the Triple Crown. You always love to hear that. That's pretty cool. Okay. Minor league update. We saw some history over the weekend down with the AA Montgomery Biscuits.
In this series, Simpson takes off, pitches high. Here's the throw to second. He is safe. 100 steals for Chandler Simpson.
Rays, or I guess Biscuits outfielder Chandler Simpson steals his 100th base of the year in for Montgomery. He kept going. That wasn't the last steal he had. It's just stealing over 100 bags is absolutely wild, right? Let me kind of give you some of the comparisons here, okay? Because that was the first inning. He went ahead and he stole two more in the game. But he had 81 bases in 2022, 94 last year. So only two other minor leaguers since 2005 have stolen 100 or more bags. Billy Hamilton had 103 in 2011 and then 155 in 2012. Delino DeShields had 101 in 2012. And then in the major leagues, nobody's stolen over 100 bags since 1987 when Vince Coleman did it for your Cardinals. So here's my question. Obviously, he can do amazing things on the base paths. He has 30 multi-steal games. He has eight games with three steals. But his batting average this year, .356 with a .412 on base and a .400 slugging. He hit a home run this year. It is his first career home run in 230 minor league games. So can a dude that is incredibly fast and great on the base paths and great at lacing singles, is that a profile that can thrive in the modern era of Major League Baseball?
I think it all depends on his defense as well. If his defense can be
it's pretty good,
as you mentioned, if his defense can translate well into the majors, then yeah, I think that's a solid nine-hole hitter, Lindsay. You put him in the nine-hole, act as a second leadoff guy. You get on base, start off the rest of your lineup, you know, quite nice, stealing bases. You might not get a lot of triples or home runs, but if you're a singles hitter that steals 100 bags, you know, that's basically saying that you're a doubles hitter, right? It just might not show in the slugging department. So I think that you definitely can, you can utilize that on a team, especially a team like the Tampa Bay Rays, who are not afraid of innovation. So absolutely, give me a Chandler Simpson to do that in the league. 100 bags. I mean, look what Ellie De La Cruz is doing. We're talking about Ellie De La Cruz doing amazing things, and he's going to maybe get to 70 this year, but he's also striking out a ton. We're not seeing that from Chandler Simpson. We're seeing him get on base a ton. It's just not those extra base exciting hits that we're seeing from everybody else. So I think there's definitely a spot in the league for a guy like him. It's just not going to be, you know, the flashing of an Ellie De La Cruz or something like that, because he doesn't hit for power. But he most definitely could be exciting, and especially in this time of the year when you're getting, you know, you have pizza boxes on first, second, and third.
Yeah, he's that old school leadoff hitter type. To your point about striking out, 26 strikeouts in 75 minor league games, so about once every three games. He has 29 walks, and from having watched him a little bit, he doesn't expand the zone a lot at all. Like he is really good with the pitch recognition and understanding where the ball is and what I can make contact with. And, you know, but again, I do think it's just one of those things where he doesn't have any noticeable power to speak up. I do think the shift restriction, not letting infielders be on the grass, is a helpful thing for him, because he's the kind of guy where, like, you know, most of his fly balls are landing in the shallow outfield. He just has very, very little power. I would legitimately give it 20 grade power on a 20 to 80 scale. That's just how bad it is. So I do think that there is a role for him to be an old school leadoff guy. His arm is also not very good at all. That's why the Rays moved him to the outfield in the first place. And most of his defense is based on his speed. As long as he stays healthy, I think he can contribute. I think he's your kind of old school leadoff hitter up there. You just can't expect him to do much more than a single when you need it. But he's fast enough where he could bunt to get on. And I think that's something there. Not a lot of teams can do that very well. And so it feels like that's still able to be effective with his skill set. It's just a little harder, a little slimmer margin for error, because everything's relying on the speed and the hit tool. And so
you're talking about a 400 on base percentage in the minors right now. Whether that's, you know, whether that's doubles, triples, home runs, or singles, it doesn't matter. You're getting on base 40% of the time. That's over league average in MLB. So you take that every time.
Yep. Okay. Real quick, couple injury updates. Over the weekend, Teoscar Hernandez goes on the injured list. And then, you know, for the Los Angeles Dodgers, Jeff McNeil goes on the IL. He has a broken wrist. He's probably out the rest of the year. I don't think he makes it back unless maybe they make the World Series. But even then, these are usually 8-week injuries. You know, you're already in early September. That takes you through to the end of October. So which of these injuries hurts more? Teoscar playing better but less often, or the everyday player in McNeil who has stats a little bit worse for the Mets this year?
Yeah, McNeil hasn't had the best season, but they're fighting themselves. They're fighting, you know, everybody else to get into the postseason. So I have to lean towards McNeil just because the Mets are fighting. However, Teoscar Hernandez, if he's not 100% for the postseason, that could be huge for the Dodgers down the stretch. He was an all-star this year, and there's a reason behind it. But I have to lean towards McNeil as of right now. I think that's the biggest part.
Yeah, I mean, losing an everyday player, a team that doesn't necessarily have a ton of guys who have played exceptionally well this year, other than, obviously, Francisco Lindor. Taking out one of those veterans obviously hurts. Means you have to go with the lesser option there. He wasn't playing incredibly well this year, but he absolutely could have turned it on in the postseason like you see so many guys do. So I kind of agree with you there. All right, real quick before we go, if you had to pick one of the three teams who is currently out of the American League wildcard race, the Tigers, the Mariners, or the Red Sox to make the postseason, which of those three are you taking?
Man, I think this is going to turn into one of the most exciting races. I think it's going to happen, but give me the Detroit Tigers. I think we still get three in the AL Central, but the Detroit Tigers can get the flip. If I have to pick one, they have the third easiest schedule down the rest of the stretch. Three against the White Sox, three against the Rockies, three against the Rays. So give me them. I think they could make it happen.
Yeah. And they do have six against the Orioles, but if Baltimore is, you know, dealing with pitching issues, we're trying to set rotations up and things like that, that could definitely help them. I think, as much as I want it to be Detroit, I think Boston has the ability to make a run. Yes, they've got four left against the Yankees and three against the Orioles. I'm not as worried about three against the Twins as I used to be. And You've got potentially Trevor Story coming back. You've had a lot of success with your position player group, moving guys around. Zidane Raphael was going to second base. I feel like Boston still has the pieces where they can make a late push. I want to know more about the health of Kenley Jansen. I know that he was out late last week. Obviously, I think they need him back in the bullpen, but I do like the idea of the Red Sox still pushing and potentially making it as a third playoff team from the AL East. Yeah. This has been First Pitch for Monday, September 9th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. It really does mean a ton. If you're on YouTube, like the video, comment down below, and subscribe to the channel. Tell all your friends. This is a great way to get all of the news from every single day in Major League Baseball. Until tomorrow's show, this has been First Pitch.